Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life, because that is what it's all about. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating is not food. It is not what you're eating. It is what's eating at you. And this is what I talk about in my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. And by the way, I have really good news, exciting news. I am, for a short time, I am giving my book away for free. All you have to do is go to drnina.info, that's drnina.info, and grab your free book. All you have to do is cover shipping and it will be yours. And I'm excited to give it away because I want as many people as possible to get the information that I talk about in the book. So, okay. So this is September and it is National Suicide Prevention Month. And I want to talk a little bit about that and let you know of a link between binge eating disorder, and an increased risk of suicide. Let's get serious a little bit, because this is an important issue. Dr. Alexis Connison writes about this in a Psychology Today online article titled "The Link Between Binge Eating and Suicide." And she writes that new research suggests that people with binge eating may be at increased risk. Actually, there's no maybe about it. A new study suggests exactly that. While it has long been recognized that people with anorexia and bulimia are at an increased risk for suicidal behaviors, little has been known about people with the most prevalent type of eating disorder. By the way, the most prevalent type of eating disorder is binge eating disorder. And until recently, there was a study in 2018 published in the BMC Psychiatry. It suggests that definitely people with binge eating disorder are at an increased risk of suicide. The study examined nearly 14,497 participants in a large, diverse, nationally representative U.S. database, so a lot of people across this country, and they found that among people with a history of binge eating disorder, over 18% had a history of attempted suicide. 10% had experienced suicidal thoughts in the last year. That is a very high percentage. That is serious. Now, unfortunately, the study did not examine the role of weight stigma, so we don't know exactly what impact this has on the relationship between binge eating, weight, and suicidality. But prior research has definitely shown that weight stigma, being fat shaming yourself, increases the risk of both eating disorders and suicidality. So again, this is from an article by Dr. Alexis Connison. She's a clinical psychologist who specializes in body issues and eating disorders. Dr. Kathleen Smith wrote an article on psychom.net about this very same thing. She makes the point that eating disorders are treatable and that thoughts of suicide can be managed and overcome. And there are some definite warning signs of suicidal thinking. So because this is Suicide Prevention Month, I want to share those with you. Maybe you know someone who is struggling. Maybe you are struggling. So I want you to be aware of the warning signs. So here are some of the warning signs of suicidality. People who talk about having no reason to live, who feel hopeless and guilty about being a burden to others, especially if they're struggling with food or an eating disorder, feeling like they're too much for other people, an increased use of alcohol or drugs, or engaging in other reckless behaviors, experiencing mood swings, displaying increased anxiety or anger, or even being really in a bad place and suddenly seeming like everything is fine. That is also a warning sign, believe it or not. People who begin to withdraw from social activities, who isolate themselves, who start to give away their possessions, big warning sign. People who express thoughts about death, thoughts about dying, thoughts about not being around in the future, even going so far as to say goodbye to family and friends. And those who start to create a plan by searching online and looking for ways to end their lives. Very serious. If you have a friend or a family member with an eating disorder who is showing signs of suicidal thoughts or behavior, you can help them. You can help them. You can show your support. If you're not sure what to do, you can call the confidential National Suicide Prevention Lifeline for help. Remember that suicide is preventable, and some form of help is always available 24/7. You can always reach someone who will help you through. And, you know, I also want to address this fear that a lot of people have of that if talking about suicide will make someone suicidal, talking about something painful will make them worse. This is a myth. It can't be farther from the truth. Asking someone what they are thinking does not put the thought in their head. If you say, hey, are you thinking about hurting yourself? They're not going to say, oh, gee, now that you mention it, yes, no. That's not going to happen. So don't be afraid to specifically ask whether they are planning to hurt themselves. Ask the direct question, are you planning to hurt yourself? Are you planning to kill yourself? And remain very calm and speak in a non-judgmental way. Tell the person you care about them. Tell them their life is meaningful and that you are willing to help them whatever it takes. And stay with the person as long as you can. But by the way, this goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. If they have a weapon, then don't try to negotiate with them. Get, you know, call 911, take the person to the nearest hospital emergency room. If you ever have suicidal thoughts, it helps sometimes to develop a written crisis plan for the future, steps on what you can take to help yourself, steps that you can do when you feel that bad, like the coping mechanisms, the coping behaviors that you can engage in, who to call a hotline, call a friend, call 911, get yourself to the hospital. And here are some numbers for you. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-TALK. TALK is 8255. It's free. It's available 24/7. The National Eating Disorders Association also has a hotline, 1-800-931-2237. That's the National Eating Disorders Association hotline, 800-931-2237. And you can call them anytime you need help and you can't get it from your support circle, or maybe you don't have support. And they will talk to you. They will get you connected with resources and treatment options and help you get on a path to recovery. Okay, so switching gears here, I want to answer a question from Iman. She wrote in my Food for Thought, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community Facebook group. She wrote, Dr. Nina, there seem to be two schools of thought on eating. One is that we are driven by emotional and psychological issues to eat what we eat. And I think, by the way, when she talks about eating, she's talking about eating problems, eating issues, stress eating, binge eating, overeating. She said, one is we are driven by emotional and psychological issues to eat what we eat, meaning, you know, overeat, binge. This is your view, as I understand it. Correct, Iman. The other is that we are driven by our lizard brains, which make us want to eat the sugary processed things due to our primal programming. or that the processed foods are too pleasure-inducing in our brains and then cause us to crave them. She says, would you please comment on this statement that was made by Andrew Taylor, the Australian guy who ate nothing but potatoes for an entire year and lost over 100 pounds to break from his quote-unquote food addiction. And he now coaches a program called the Spud Fit Challenge, where you eat nothing but potatoes for 30 days or more. Oh, my God. Okay. Really? 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 When I read that, I thought, this has got to be a joke. This is like, am I being punked? Is this like some, you know, Saturday Night Live like skit or something? But no, it's true. It's real. It's a real thing. She says that according to this Andrew Taylor, Spud Man, he says part of the beauty of the Spud Fit Challenge is that you learn there's never a time where you can make a legitimate excuse for eating poorly. If you can stick with potatoes through all kinds of difficult situations and make it work, then it will help you later on when the little junkie in your head is trying to talk you into eating junk. Don't let other people, places, restaurants, events, weather, or any other scenario control what you eat. You and only you are the ones who decide what goes on in your mouth. Unquote. If you can't see me, I am making a face of disgust, a face of eye-rolling, unbelievable disbelief, except it's real. Kind of like how I feel every time I listen to our president. Okay. Iman says, she says, now it's her talking. This is his philosophy. She made the mistake of trying this and realized it's just a diet like any other, a restriction. That's right, Iman. She says it doesn't solve the problem. For him, it did, but I'd like to understand why and why this works for some people so well. Gee, Iman, I wonder what the heck happens on day 31 if you make it that far. You know, I'm guessing people are going to binge on steak or broccoli or bread or something. First, let me start with a question about the food addiction. This notion of food addiction, sugar addiction, any kind of food addiction, is something I discussed extensively in my new book, The Binge Cure, and also in another book I co-edited that I released earlier this year, Beyond the Primal Addiction. I wrote a chapter on food addiction. And of course, I also write about it in my first book, Food for Thought. The short answer is that we are not addicted to the substance of food. We are not. But we may be psychologically addicted to eating as a way of responding, a way of habitually responding to painful or upsetting situations or feelings. So by the way, for every scientific study that purports to prove food addiction, there are many others, many, many others that disprove it. One of the arguments that I hear a lot is that rats, when given a choice between sugar and heroin, they choose sugar. They choose sugar. That's not a proof that sugar is more addicted than heroin. Rats are motivated by survival, so they will choose the food every time. Of course, they're going to choose sugar, not heroin. Heroin is not food. Sugar is food. As for why people do well on the Spud Challenge or any diet, look, diets work as long as you stay on them. But you can't stay on them. You cannot sustain that level of deprivation. Ultimately, diets do not address why you are turning to food. Diets focus on what you're eating and what you're not eating. Oh, hold that thought. I have a call. Oh, caller. I am so sorry. I was looking into space and I did not see the call coming in. So if you hear this, please call me back. I promise I will answer your call. Sorry. I'm getting all carried away. I'm not looking at my screen. Okay. Diets focus on what you're eating and not eating, but not why. So regarding this notion that eating only potatoes for a month will help you feel empowered, I find that really sad. It's a gimmick. It's a gimmick, and it is ultimately only about willpower, right? To me, true empowerment means identifying the root causes of food problems and resolving them. That leads to permanently changing your relationship to food, permanently changing your relationship to yourself. We have minds. We do not just have brains. So yes, you can use willpower and you could say, hey, I'm not going to eat anything but potatoes for a month. That is not empowerment. That is deprivation disguised as empowerment. That is plucking a weed. It is not getting to the root. You don't want to live like white knuckling it through life going, I don't need food. I made it through eating potatoes for a month, so I don't need this. I mean, I guess there's some sort of weird like point to that, but there are so many other easier ways to free yourself from the tyranny of an eating addiction or from obsessing and being preoccupied about every bite. So Iman also wrote in, she wrote in that she said, people say they don't get bored of eating just potatoes after a while. I find that hard to believe. And that the idea behind this is that food doesn't need to be and shouldn't be interesting. He, this Andrew guy, says to make, what's his name, right? Let me check. Yes, Andrew, says food doesn't need to be and shouldn't be interesting to make life interesting and to make food boring. That's the key. In other words, find something else to find pleasure in than just eating food. Absolutely. I agree with that. However, not at the expense of enjoying food. Iman says food is one of life's pleasures, so why deny that to ourselves? Agreed. She says, I suppose after some adjustment of the appetite, simple food does taste more interesting and satisfying, but to say never ever to eat cake at a birthday or steak on your anniversary seems too Spartan for me. Of course, it is too Spartan. That's why it seems too Spartan. It is ridiculous. People attend parties and bring spuds and deny themselves even a small amount of cake. That's strict, I'll say. When I mentioned, this is Iman saying, when she mentioned she was going to have some cake on her birthday, Andrew asked why she needed to have cake, that I should celebrate without it. One ought to be able to enjoy these foods without becoming addicted to them or without binging on them. I think his idea is that you can learn to deal with your emotional problems in some way other than with food by simply eliminating the foods entirely. That's where it all goes wrong. That's where the problem is. You cannot solve the problem of emotional conflict or conflict feeling bad about yourself by eating something different. You cannot solve problem A by addressing problem B. Eating potatoes only for a month and telling yourself that you have great willpower is not going to change your relationship to yourself. And by the way, I think it is very important to acknowledge, yes, there's nothing wrong. It's not a crime to have cake on your birthday. It's not a crime to have cake for dessert. Cake is only a problem when you are using it to resolve something psychological, when you are using cake or anything else to change the way you feel, to escape, to numb, to reward, all of that. That's when it's a problem. Here's the key, Iman. Balance is key. Creating balance is essential to live your life, both in terms of food and in every way. Food is a pleasure in life. We shouldn't view it as just fuel. We shouldn't. We should enjoy it. That's the point of food. We should enjoy it. And by the way, we shouldn't shame ourselves for eating. And by the way, you enjoy food much more when you normalize your relationship to your feelings, to your internal world, to how you feel, what you want, your wishes, your needs, all of those things. When you normalize that and can meet your true needs, you don't use food for those purposes. And to make this point even more, I want to share an article. Today is article day. Okay, I want to share an article from the New York Times, and it's called Smash the Wellness Industry, written by Jessica Knoll. She says, why are so many smart women falling for the wellness industry's harmful pseudoscientific claims? And this is her article. So a few months ago, she had lunch with the writer behind one of her favorite movies of the year. She also had lunch with the agent who made the deal and the producer who packaged the project. She wanted to hear all about the process and perhaps find an opportunity to collaborate. When the server came to take their order, she flashed to that scene in Rami and Michelle's high school reunion when Mira Sorvino walks into a diner in a striped skirt and asks the waitress, "Do you have some sort of businesswoman special?" Had there been any sort of businesswoman special that day, our group probably wouldn't have ordered it. Someone was slogging through the Whole30 program. Someone else had eliminated dairy. Someone else was simply trying to be good after a bad weekend. The producer said it didn't matter how good she was. She had lost the baby weight, and though she may look tolerable in clothes, under the Spanx, her stomach was a horror show, her words. The writer said she had so much cellulite on her thighs, she looked diseased. Jessica gazed around the restaurant longingly, wondering what the men eating cheeseburgers were talking about. She says, at one time, I too would have gleefully torn myself apart. I despised my body, and my devotion to changing it amounted to years of unpaid labor, starting with a bout of bulimia in high school. In preparation for my wedding, I worked out twice a day on 800 calories. From there, I moved on to counting macros, replacing rice with cauliflower pellets, 13-day cleanses, intermittent fasting, and an elimination diet that barred sugar, dairy, and nightshades, like potatoes. I swear, I didn't even plan that. That just worked out that way. That's just so perfect. I just have to laugh. Okay, it's me laughing. Every new regimen ended in the same violent binge. I'd wait for my husband to go to bed so that I could obliterate the pantry without him asking, "Are you okay?" For the next few days, I would throw myself on the altar of clean eating, only to start the cycle all over again. I called this poisonous relationship between a body I was indoctrinated to hate and food I had been taught to fear, wellness. This was before I could recognize wellness culture for what it was, a dangerous con that seduces smart women with pseudoscientific claims of increasing energy, reducing inflammation, lowering the risk of cancer, and healing skin, gut, and fertility problems. But at its core, wellness is about weight loss. It demonizes calorie-dense and delicious foods, preserving a vicious fallacy. Thin is healthy, and healthy is thin. Almost 3 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles from New York. After death and divorce, moving is supposed to be the most stressful thing you could go through, and eating became my salve. I had a second book and a screenplay due, a new city to explore, and friends to make, but I could hardly focus on any of that for how crazy I felt around food. So I did a desperate thing. I researched intuitive eating online. Thanks to a stint at a health magazine, I had a glancing understanding of the philosophy, which encourages a return to the innate wisdom we had as babies about when to stop eating, what tastes good, and how it makes our bodies feel. I might have sought it out sooner if not for the part where you learn to accept how your body looks once you stop restricting food, even if that version of your body is larger than you would like. This search led me to a nearby dietitian who is considered by some to be one of the founding mothers of intuitive eating. I picked up the phone. Intuitive eating has been around for decades, but it's suddenly receiving a lot of attention. Perhaps it's because women are finally starting to interrogate the systems that hurt and exploit us. Exploit, by the way, $60 billion diet industry. $60 billion with a B a year diet industry that wants us to stay dieting, wants us to hate our bodies, wants us to diet and diet and diet. And not just women, men, everyone, humans. Back to the article. Perhaps it's because we're driven and ambitious and we need energy. Not lighthearted leafy greens energy, but real energy, the kind that comes from eating the hearty foods men eat. I had paid a lot of money to see a dietitian once before in New York. When I told her that I loved food, that I always had a big appetite, she had nodded sympathetically as if I had a really rough road ahead of me. "The thing is," she said with a grimace, "you're a small person and you don't need a lot of food." The new dietitian had a different take. "What a gift," she said appreciatively. "To love food, it is one of the greatest pleasures in life. Can you think of your appetite as a gift?" It took me a moment to wrap my head around such a radical suggestion. And then I began to cry. 2 years into my work with her, I feel lighter than I ever have. Food is a part of my life, a fun part, but it no longer tastes irresistible the way it did when I told myself I couldn't have it. Remember, the anticipation or the experience of deprivation makes you want something more. My body looks as it always has had. Let me start that over. My body looks as it always has when I'm not restricting or binging. I'm not good one day so that I can be bad another, which I once foolishly celebrated as balance. Occasionally, when I'm stressed, I comfort myself with food, and my dietitian assures me that's an acceptable kind of hunger, too. Every once in a while, we all do it. Emotional eating is a coping mechanism. We're told it's an unhealthy habit, one we must break, but that's another wellness lie. It's not vodka in our morning coffee. My binges stopped once I stopped judging myself for wanting to eat the foods that wellness vilified, sometimes for reasons other than physical hunger. I no longer define food as whole or clean or sinful or a cheat. It has no moral value. Neither should my weight, although I'm still trying to separate my worth from my appearance. They are two necklaces that have gotten tangled over the course of my 35 years. They're thin metal chains tied up in thin metal knots. Eventually, I will pry them apart. These days, I feel good in my skin. That said, I'm probably never going to love my body. And that's okay. I think loving our bodies is not only an unrealistic goal in our appearance-obsessed society, but also a limiting one. No one is telling men that they need to love their bodies to live a full and meaningful life. We don't need to love our bodies to respect them. Thoughts? Comments? Give me a call. Let me know what you think. I think this is an incredibly powerful article. I'm going to post it later on my Facebook page. I think every woman and every man, every person who is struggling with eating and with their weight really needs to read that article, because it just summarizes my philosophy and what she's talking about, like, in terms of how deprivation caused her to want things. People say, but if I let myself have it, I'm never going to stop eating it. No, actually, if you let yourself have it, you'll stop eating it when you're done. It's when you think you can't have it that you feel guilty for having it. And then you think, I better have more of it because I'm not going to ever have it again until I lose the weight. And then you're on that horrible cycle. Actually, normalizing food and letting yourself have whatever that you want to eat helps you make healthier choices. And this was exemplified by a study which the people were trying to, they were trying to prove the efficacy of of food addiction. They're trying to say that food addiction is a real thing. And so they told people, hey, research participants, eat the foods that are your forbidden foods. Eat those bad foods. They were positing that if people started eating these bad foods, these hyper palatable, sugary, whatever, you know, full of fat, whatever it was, whether it was sugar, whether it was potato chips, whatever it was, the theory was once people started eating these foods, they would stop, would not stop. They would not stop because they were addicted. Brain, right? However, guess what happened? They stopped. They did not binge. This research study actually ended up proving that food addiction is not real. They ended up disproving food addiction, because when people were given permission to eat the things that they thought they couldn't or shouldn't have, when they were given permission to have it, they had some and then they stopped. And that shows the importance of our minds, right? Our brains are just the physical organs of our bodies, but our minds are powerful. Okay. If you have any thoughts about what I'm talking about today, I welcome your calls. Again, 818-602-4929. To the caller who called earlier and didn't get through because I wasn't looking at my screen and I didn't see your call until too late, please call back. Give me another chance. I will pick up your call this time. All right. So since it's article day, I wanted to share also this article on body image. It's called, I stopped talking about my body for 30 days, and my body kind of freaked out. So this is an article by Anna Svoboda, published on Shape Magazine Online just a couple of days ago, September 16th. And this is what she has to say. I didn't see my body through the lens of self-worth until I was in sixth grade and still wearing clothes bought at Kids R Us. A mall outing soon revealed that my peers didn't wear size 12 girls and instead shopped at stores for teens. I decided I needed to do something about this disparity, so the next Sunday at church, I balanced on my knobby knees and looked at the crucifix hanging on the wall, begging God to give me a body that could fit into Junior's clothing. Height, hips, I'd take anything. I wanted to fit into the clothes, but mainly I wanted to fit in with the other bodies wearing them. Then I hit puberty and my boobs came in. Meanwhile, I was doing sit-ups in my bedroom to get abs like Britney's. In college, I discovered queso and cheap beer, along with long-distance running and the occasional habit of binging and purging. I also learned that men could have opinions about my body, too. When a guy I was dating poked my stomach and said, "You should do something about that." Okay. You should do something about that. I hope she stopped dating that guy. She laughed it off. She says, "I laughed it off, but later tried to wick off his words with each bead of sweat." So no, my relationship with my body has never been healthy. But I've also found that unhealthy relationships are popular topics for me and my female friends, whether we're talking about bosses, ex-boyfriends, or the skin we're in. It bonds us. Saying things like, "I just had 4 pounds of pizza. I'm a disgusting monster." Or, "Ugh, I need to haze myself at the gym after this wedding weekend." Those kinds of comments were the norm for her. I started to rethink this when novelist Jessica Knoll published a New York Times opinion piece called "Smash the Wellness Industry." That's the article I just read. She proposed a new kind of test. Women, can two or more of us get together without mentioning our bodies and diets? It would be a small act of resistance and kindness to ourselves. I had spent so many days taking on other challenges, a 30-day yoga challenge, giving up sweets for Lent, a keto vegan diet. Why not this? The rules. I wouldn't talk about my body for 30 days, and I'd gently try to shut down others' negative chatter. How hard could that be? I'd simply ghost a text, run to the restroom, change the subject. Plus, I was away from my usual crew because my husband's job had recently moved us to London, so I figured I'd have fewer opportunities for all this nonsense to begin with. As it turns out, this type of chatter is everywhere, whether it's dinner parties with new faces or WhatsApp convos with old friends. Okay. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hey, Dr. Nina. This is Casey.
Hey, Casey. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good today. I'm doing good. Now, I was trying to talk to you about my problem.
Okay.
I guess you would call it an event situation either. For example, anywhere I go, I align certain foods with it. And, you know, I'm pretty active socially, my diet is, you know, I can't do a diet. It's impossible. Because,
that's good. That's good.
For example, if I go out with the lads and then I'll have a giant breakfast with a few spirits. And then I'll go from there to go meet my mother. Even though I'm not hungry.
Your mother.
I'll go with her. We'll go to a nice little restaurant. Then I'll eat. Then my roommate will barbecue. And I just have to eat. I feel like I put myself under pressure to eat at events and situations, and it's like I feel like I'm being rude if I walk away from the meal. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. Okay,
and so then I feel disgusting at night, you know, or in the morning, sometimes both.
Okay, so the problem seems to be, and then disgusting. Okay, the problem, first of all, that's super insightful because you already identified what I was going to try to help you get to, which is, well, what would it be like not to have these big meals with everyone? And you said you think it's rude if you walk away. So it's rude if you don't join in with them and kind of keep up with them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like, you know, for example, okay, if I meet with my mother, she'll say, "I need you to try this." And then if I say, "No, I don't want it," she'll say, "What's wrong? What's going on in your life?" Then it's a whole different situation. Then I have to make up something to make it seem why I don't want to eat. And then she's like, "Well, eat this, hun, and you'll feel better." And then next thing you know, sometimes I just want to be like, really, I'm not hungry, but I don't. And then, okay. You know, then Everybody's like, you need to do this keto diet and all this stuff. I'm like,
Don't listen to them. Okay, I'm glad you're not listening to them. But, okay, a couple things I picked out. One is your mom says eat this and you'll feel better. So your mom is definitely of the notion that food makes things feel better. Like, I don't know, someone once said, you know what, it's impossible to be upset if you eat ice cream. Like, you can't be upset and then eat ice cream. So if you eat ice cream, you won't be upset anymore. Well, that means you never deal with your upset feelings and you're always eating ice cream and then you get upset for yourself for eating ice cream. So your mom is saying, eat this and you'll feel better, which is a notion to be challenged, first of all. And secondly, I would like to challenge the idea that you're rude if you say no.
Yeah, that's the tough one. Because I don't generally think people... I think I put that on myself, you know? I don't think people are saying, oh, well, you know, you're being rude.
What do you tell yourself? How are you being rude?
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I feel like I'm not being part of the situation. Like really, when I go... This is the major problem. This is it. When I go hang out with the boys in the morning, I really don't want to eat this large breakfast that they have, but then everybody's just like, what's wrong with... You know, that's the pressure. My mom is usually fine, but... That morning breakfast, like I'm going to do, Sunday's going to be a mess. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to be up at 6 a.m. I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to eat this huge breakfast. I'm going to have a lot of spirits. Then I'm going to go hang out and watch another sporting event. And it's just like, I don't know when to stop.
Okay.
I always have to eat when I go somewhere.
But that, it seems to be because you associate eating with the situation and also that you're, the lads, you know, your buddies are telling you, hey, what's wrong with you if you're not keeping up with them? So maybe I'm wondering if you eat something different or eat less, you feel like you're not part of the group, something along those lines?
Exactly. And I want to say it's peer pressure. I feel like I'm too much of an individual and I'm too cool to be in peer pressure, but it is some form of peer pressure. Uh-oh, dog. I have to step away for a second. I will call you back.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
Then no worries. All bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
Well, I look forward to him calling back and talking more about that because, you know, so often it's like more like internal pressure, sounds like. But I'm going to save that for when Casey calls back and get back to this article. So, she says, negative body image is a global epidemic. Over the course of a month in which she basically didn't shame herself, didn't body shame herself, here's what she learned. People of all shapes and sizes are unhappy with their bodies. Once I started paying attention to these conversations, I realized everyone was having them, regardless of body type and size. I talked to people that fall into the 2% of American women who actually have runway bodies, and they have complaints too. Moms feel like there's this ticking clock dictating when they should be back to pre-baby weight. Brides think they should be losing 10 pounds because everyone says the stress makes the weight fall right off. Clearly, this problem is about more than the size or the number on the scale. Second thing she learned, it's hard to avoid social media conversations. She says, I've never been one to put up pictures of my body, mainly because I've never been proud enough to flaunt it. But it's still hard to avoid all the conversations we have about our bodies on the internet. Some of these conversations are truly body positive, like hashtag love my shape. But if you're trying to avoid the chatter altogether, Instagram is a minefield and a deceiving one. Before this challenge, my sister showed me apps that let you nip in your stomach and pull your hips out and get a Kardashian silhouette in just a few taps. While visiting my best friend Sarah in the U.S., we downloaded another app that made our frames look svelter, teeth brighter, and skin smoother. Hi, Casey.
Wow. Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so my point was... really, I just don't think it's possible for me to... The fact that I do a lot of things socially, I don't think I could do a diet. I don't think I could eat healthy because I equate... Like I said, I equate going places and eating. You know, everywhere I go, everything I do, there has to be a meal involved.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that you say you don't want to go on a diet, because diets are not, you know, the first chapter of my book is why you should ditch dieting. So that's
okay,
good. No diets. First chapter of my book, ditch dieting. And I tell you why. It seems to me that the problem is not food and it is not peer pressure. It is some connection that you have between bonding with your friends and eating, as if you're not, or your mother or whoever, if you're not eating while you're with them, somehow you're not, the connection or the time you're having together seems to be compromised. And it doesn't help that they ask you what's wrong, but I'm going to guess that if you spend a few Sundays just telling them, I'm changing my ways or whatever, they're going to stop asking you what's wrong. What's wrong with you? And then just be more accepting. But you seem to have a connection between eating and the intensity of the connection with the people you're with. Would you say that resonates?
Yeah, that resonates. And I'm going to try this Sunday. I'm going to say to everybody, nah, I'm not going to eat. I'm going to tape it and I'm going to send it to you. You're going to see a reaction that you won't believe. I guarantee my boy Matthew's going to be like, feed him. Something's wrong with this guy. Give him food. Is this it?
All right.
This is the friends
okay,
I deal
then
with.
I need to have, you know, Matthew needs to call in and I'm going to tell Matthew, like, hey, guess what? You know what? Not eating is not a sign that there's something wrong with your buddy. So you need to come up with you need to come up with some responses. It sounds to me like you want to.
Oh, no, I'm going to have a lot of them for you.
Okay.
I'm going to test this out this weekend.
Okay, what are you going to say to Matthew? Okay, I'll be Matthew. All right, you be you. okay, what's wrong with this boy? What? Feed him.
I don't know that right now. I'm good.
What do you mean you're good? What are you saying? You're not good. You're not eating. What's your problem? Eat something.
I don't have a problem, bro. I just want to watch the game and just relax. I'm eating light.
Okay.
No.
That's not going to work.
It's going to be more aggressive than that.
Okay, what's he going to... Okay, aggressive. Let's switch. You be Matthew, I'll be you.
All right, go ahead.
Hey, you know what? I'm good. I'm only going to have this much. That's all I'm going to order.
Bro, we're on a winning streak. You need to eat. You got to do the routine. If you don't do the routine, then we're going to lose.
Wait a minute.
This guy's nuts. He's not eating.
Wait, if I don't eat, the team's going to lose? My superpower is eating. Oh, my God. This is amazing. What are you telling me?
You're big negative. We're in fourth place. We need you to eat.
So really, if I eat,
and
then they'll
sing a song
win?
Encouraging me to eat.
Mm. Okay, well, okay, then say, so sing the song. I want to hear the song.
No, it's going to be vulgar. I'm not going to sing it right now. My mother raised me a lot better than
okay,
that.
Then you say, wow, I love that song. Sing it again, Matthew. Sing it again. And you say,
oh, reverse psychology.
Yeah, sing it again. I can't hear enough of that song. So look, you tell him your superpower is not actually, your eating is not going to actually change the outcome of the game. And
and I know it's not, but...
No, I know. I know, and he knows. But you just, that's what you say, like you, instead of going defending yourself,
I'll eat just to shut him up. And that's the bad part, because I'm going to settle to make him happy.
Mm-hmm. Where did you learn to do that?
I have a traffic jam and people are looking at me like I'm crazy.
Okay. Call back next week and let me know how it goes.
Oh, I'm going to have audio and video proof for you.
I look forward to it. You can email it to me. I can't wait to see it. Bye. Right. Bye, Casey.
Bye.
Oh, you see the pressure that happens. All right, well, we'll see what Casey, like, I mean, I would think that, like, the football or what, I don't know what he's watching, football, baseball, I'm sure it's some sport that involves a ball, because all sports do, right? Or I don't know, I don't think that's true either. We'll see what happens with Casey. Okay, so back to the article. So she's saying that she and her friend had these apps and they made themselves have brighter teeth and smaller waists and this or that. We ended up posting our unedited pics, but let me tell you, it was tempting to post the more flattering ones. So how do we know which pics on our feed are real and which are photoshopped? Excellent point. And the other point I would make about Instagram is, you know, don't compare your real life to someone else's highlights. We're doing on time. Okay. Checking your thoughts is another story entirely. Even though I wasn't talking about my body, she says, I was thinking about it constantly. I kept daily logs about the food I ate and the conversations I heard. I even had a nightmare in which I was publicly weighed on a giant scale, showing in glowing red numbers that I was 15 pounds heavier than I had ever been. Even though I had my body image issues, I've never dreamt about my weight before. It's like I was obsessing about not obsessing. Next point, it's not just about what you say, it's about how you feel. I wasn't feeling great. This silence topic was like an awkward, weight-conscious elephant in the room. By trying to find balance, I was teetering out of control. I was working out every morning. I was trying not to overthink my diet, but unconsciously taking stock. I skipped breakfast. For lunch, I'd eat salad and a vegan chocolate peanut butter cup. Hi, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, this is Nick.
Hi,
how are you?
Hi, Nick. Great to hear from you. Just so you know, I have only about 4 minutes, but tell me what's going on. Nick? Hello?
Hello?
I'm here. I can hear you.
All right, real quickly. So I'm trying to get myself back in shape with my back and all these other things, the fast growing, just all the boring things I got to do to work myself back. And with it, it's painful. I hate to exercise. I hate to just try to get this feeling better. And it's not getting as great as I really want it to be in this pain that I have. And so, like, I'm thinking the only pleasure I have really thinking is, food. And I'm paying more attention to food than I have in the past. Like, I'm getting up in the morning and getting ready to go. I have my oatmeal. I have this. I do this, a routine. And I think, where am I going to eat lunch? What am I going to have for dinner? What am I going to do today? And I'll get rid of that noise. And it's driving me crazy. And I'm feeling bad. And this past weekend, I went to a wedding. And it's been a long time till I went to a wedding and, you know, had plenty of food, hors d'oeuvres, you know, and I just started eating. I just started eating. And I didn't even have to eat, but the food was different. I hadn't had food like that in a long time, so I ate a lot. And I'm just really down on myself that I can't control myself.
Okay, and, Nick, I'm sorry to cut you off. I just want to make sure that I answer because now I only have 2 minutes. All right, so really fast. Last week you called in and you were also talking about feeling bad about your body and about what you were eating. And we identified that if you were not thinking about these things, you might be in touch with some uncomfortable thoughts about your girlfriend's semi-hoarding.
Right.
You also went to a wedding, and weddings can...
Right.
Pull up all weddings can be very triggering. It can make you, you know, some people go to weddings and they think about, you know, their own weddings in the past or things that didn't work out, or there can be all kinds of undercurrents going on at a wedding. And so it can be easier to focus on food and to be down on yourself than to think about other painful thoughts, perhaps about other people, perhaps about the past. Right. So I think that I would encourage for you to look at, well, if you weren't thinking about all of those things, if you weren't thinking about food, weight, down on yourself, what would be on your mind? So I hate to cut you off, but unfortunately I have to go. Will you call me back next week and we can talk about it more?
Of course.
Call me back at the beginning of the show so we have a lot of time, because I really do want to talk to you about this. This is something that so many people can relate to. So it's important.
Thank you for the time, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take good care. And remember, think about it. Be curious, not critical. Curious, not critical.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I got it.
Okay. Bye, Nick. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, and that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday live at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen later anywhere you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere that you get your podcasts. And again, I want to remind you about my free book. There are limited copies, and I want you to grab yours. Go to drnina.info, that's drnina.info, and pick up your copy today. I'll see you next week. Stay curious, not critical, all of you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.